Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into 11 Personnel, brought to you by our friends at Port Royal Plants. Port Royal Plants, your one-stop shop for all your CBD needs, a Kentucky Proud product from right up the road on I-571 in Henry County. They've got everything you need, full spectrum organic CBD, portroyalplants.com, whether it's the back balm or maybe some Epsom salt baths. They're a good place to shop this Christmas. Small Business Friday is happening. Visit PortRoyalPlants.com this Friday for Small Business Friday. Tell them KSR sent you. I'm Nick Roush with Adam Luckett, getting you ready for the Governor's Cup this Saturday between the Cats and the Cards. We've talked about Georgia a little bit, but you know what, Luckett? Like, we're moving on. It's on to Louisville, right? This is a rivalry game. We are in the city of Louisville. This game... It just means a little bit more for folks like us who have to deal with these clowns year round.
Yeah, I think you look this year too. There's stakes that we didn't think were going to be stakes here, right? Like, we thought maybe Scott Satterfield will be coaching for his job in this game. Maybe he would be gone by this point.
Mm-hmm.
Louisville maybe would be scratching and calling for bowl eligibility, and Kentucky would be looking for a big win to cap off what has been a really good season. None of that is the case right now. You know, Louisville's 7-4. They've got a chance to be 8-4. Like, Nick, they got a chance to finish the year ranked right now if they get a couple wins here. They're 5-1 in their last six games. A lot of good things are going their way. Whereas Kentucky, 1-3 since the bye week, reeling, got all kinds of issues, all kinds of stuff they need to figure out. They really need a win here. And so it's an interesting dynamic here. But it's a great opportunity. Play your biggest rival, last game of the season. Get a chance in a disappointing season on a good note if you're Kentucky. So it's a huge moment. It's a huge spot. They really need to win this game. You can't lose three games at home as a favorite.
Favorite, yeah.
That's a bad look if that happens. And so they really got to figure it out here with Louisville. And I will say, Nick, last 2 weeks or so, I was pretty worried about this game, but I feel better when I kind of dove in to how these teams match up. I think it's lining up to be a good matchup for Kentucky. That's not saying they'll win the game, but I think Kentucky's the better team here. I think they match up well with Louisville. So now they'll have to do it on the field, but I think there's some real reasons to feel optimistic if you're a Kentucky supporter going into this matchup.
It's kind of funny because it's like all of my big picture, just like trash talking takes. That's just like, you know, dumb meatball brain kind of takes. They're kind of true when you really dig into it. Like, Louisville's beaten no good teams. They want to play the schedule stuff all they want with Kentucky every year. They've done kind of the same this year where they're scratching and calling for points and they get a bunch of turnovers and to win
the game. The thing is, like, Louisville's beaten five teams, I think, with seven wins already. So, like, UCF, Pittsburgh, James Madison, Wake Forest. Who is the other one I'm missing? NC State.
NC State, yeah. But they're all, like, seven-win teams.
Yeah, like if you if you go to SP Plus, I'm not sure how many teams. Let's do that right quick. Just general advanced stat ranking. Mm-hmm. Let's see who's ranked higher than Kentucky on those teams. And Kentucky slipped. Kentucky's down at 36. This is the lowest they've been all season. Let's see here.
But there still might be the highest ranked team they face outside of Clemson.
Yeah, UCF is 30. UCF is the only one higher, Nick.
In that game, we were down in Florida just wondering what the hell Gus was doing the whole time.
Yeah, and that one was a total, not to take anything away from Louisville, but that one was a total, that was a total
malpractice
by Gus Malzahn.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, like, I'm not going to take away from Louisville here. They've had a solid season. Mm-hmm. They've beaten some teams with good records. They played some bad offenses here. And, you know, you would feel a lot better about this matchup, I think, if Kentucky was good on offense, but they're not. So that is obviously baked in there. Everything about this screams slugfest. Like, these are two top 20 defenses. It's going to be about who makes the biggest mistake. The worry is Louisville just forces so many turnovers. But my argument to that would be if you can take care of the football, they're not as efficient as Kentucky is on defense. So efficiency, Kentucky should be able to stay ahead of the chains, move the ball, own time of possession, own ball control, and that should favor them. But we'll see if that plays out that way.
It's a total of 43. Really tasty under, if I do say so myself. Going to be tasty this week. We're going to talk a little bit.
Rain is in the forecast.
Yeah, yeah. I saw 40% chance most recently. Cold rain. Remember the last time there was cold rain at Kroger Field, Saturday after Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
Chris Rodriguez, I think Lynn Bowden just scored another touchdown.
Yeah. Chris Rodriguez, I think, had 9 carries for 125 yards. He is like the – we can get in this match, but like he's the key to the game to me. Louisville, like if you were going to compare them to defense Kentucky's seen this year, it's the most comparable as Mississippi State. It's an odd front where they twist and move linebackers or off-ball linebackers around, and they're just coming with pressure, and they got all these different type of pressure packages. And it's a defense that is really good against spread offenses. But if you can get in heavy sets and run the ball down straight ahead, I think they could have some issues because the interior defensive line is still tough. I mean, they got two former walk-ons, Nick, playing a lot of snaps still.
Yeah, yeah.
So for Kentucky, I think that's really what it's going to be all about is getting in big sets, getting Josh Caddis maybe to block down backers at points, double teams, get Chris Rodriguez rolling north-south and try to control the game that way. And you look at Mississippi State, that was when Kentucky had their best offensive performance.
Yep. Chris Rodriguez had, what, 195 rushing in that
197,
game?
197, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely steamed on the Bulldogs. So let's go ahead and get in this rundown and kind of go through the checkpoints, if you will, as we get into this Governor's Cup matchup. Saturday, 3 p.m. on the SEC Network. Cats, Cards, rain in the forecast. It looks like Malik Cunningham is going to be back.
Yeah.
I don't have the exact quote in front of me, but the word from Satterfield on Tuesday's press conference was, it looks like he's going to be back. And I think Steven's got a picture you can see in the top right corner. But if I mean this thing that he's got wearing on his left hand, he's got
that's
broken
from the Clemson game.
Yeah, he broke his hand. Was it the week before or during that game? That
yeah,
actually,
they're not saying it, but that looks like a broken hand to me.
Yeah.
And then he hurt his shoulder against Clemson. But if you go back and watch the play where he falls down at the end of the half, I mean, he's like clutching
he falls
that
on
hand.
His hand. Yeah. And
Nick, imagine if you're rolling. Like you want to run a play out of the pistol to the right, a stretch handoff. How's he handing this ball off?
Yeah, you can't.
Can he grip the ball with that? Do you want him bumping into like that? Just seems like it's going to be very hard to play quarterback with a wrap that big. So that's going to be a big thing to watch. It's just that I mean, like that. I joke with you off air, but that seems like 5 fumbles just waiting to happen.
Oh, in the rain.
And then, yeah, you throw rain on top of it. Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
And you also have a guy, too, that when he gets hit, it's like somebody lit a stick of dynamite off up his ass. Like, he just, like, blows up in a thousand different directions. If he's got his hand in a cast, I think this is a great idea, Scott. Well, you know what? You're really letting your guy go out with a bang. More power to you. But it is like we do have to mention Brock, the Doughman factor. Brock Doughman, a college football journeyman, has come in and he's played well in spots for them. And you do have to prepare like he's going to play because
you have to prepare for both. Yeah. You can't. What happened at Vanderbilt can't happen this week.
Right.
They were not prepared for Mike. They can say whatever they want, but they just weren't ready for Mike Wright. First pull of the game, he goes 70 yards right down the left hash. That cannot happen this week. You cannot let them get a bunch of yards on QB run. The surprising thing about the Vanderbilt game was they were awesome against QB run all season until that point.
Well,
so that is the scary part about this game because the best thing Louisville does on offense is run Cunningham. He's got over 600 non-sack rushing yards. He leads the team in rushing touchdowns with 11. He's a great red zone weapon with his legs, and he can run around, scramble, and make things happen, running the ball-wise. And then on the pull and on some of the option game, he can really give you trouble out there on the edge. But, one, how willing are they going to be to run him with – you know, a walking injury that everybody knows.
Mm-hmm. It's no secret.
How is the ball security going to be for him? Mm-hmm. That's a big worry. Now, if you bring Doughman in, Doughman has a higher explosive passing rate than Malik with smaller sample size. He made some really good vertical throws against Clemson, mostly to Tyler Hudson. But he's been very turnover prone. I think, Nick, like 20% of his passes are right there that ended in a pass breakup or an interception. Yeah, I think he's got four interceptions and 13 pass breakups, and he's only thrown 102 passes. And so he's been pretty inefficient. You watched the tape last week. Louisville gets in third and long. They're running the ball. They're not messing around. They get in Clemson in third and long with Doughman in there. They were running the football. So they're not taking a lot of chances. Satterfield has pretty much said, all right, our offense stinks. Defense is really good. I'm not going to blow the game. And we got good special teams. I'm not blowing the game with our offense. So we're going to be conservative, and we're going to play to our defense. To me, that's probably what's going to happen.
Scott Satterfield said on Tuesday, if we could score some touchdowns, that'd be great. That'd be awesome. I put
one offensive touchdown against NC State. And then they had two total against Clemson, and one came on a desperation play at the end.
Put a poll on Twitter, and so far nobody's got the correct answer. They're guessing between Coach Rich, Satterwhite, and Stoops, and Satterwhite least in the poll. So it shows you where people's mentality and mindset is now with offenses that are struggling.
That's another reason I think Kentucky can win this game. Right, we know they struggle to score, but Louisville like their offense is struggling to score as well. You go back to the Pittsburgh game, Nick. I think they won. They won that game. What was that? 24-10. But they got a scoop and score there at the end when Pittsburgh was trying to drive down and score. So like they struggled to score in that game. So like scoring is an issue for this Louisville team. I mean, you look at some of the numbers. They have worse numbers in success rate, points per drive, and EPA. Louisville's offense. We know how bad Kentucky's offense has been, and so it's really a battle of. You know, what team can get the three touchdowns first? And the big worry is Louisville's defense, just not letting them set up a cheap score for their offense.
Yeah, and there was a point, you know, when you were talking earlier about Mike Wright and just how bad Kentucky played against that game. I go back to the game against Anthony Richardson in Florida where they were awesome. And we had that story from Todd McShay talking about the whole team coming to the sideline, Heisman my ass, Heisman this, and they were fired up for that game. Today, Satterfield, he essentially said last year, things got a little sideways. We lost our composure, got too emotional. We can't be too emotional in this game. Brian Brown echoed that statement. And I think that's – Kentucky's doing the opposite, right?
Yeah, like, they lean into it.
They lean into it, and that's when they're at their best. So to that extent, I'm not as worried about it. I think the Vanderbilt was really a byproduct of not getting people fired up not getting them to buy in. If I'm going to take one good thing away from that Georgia game, it's that they were able to get fired up for that game. If you're getting fired up for them, you're getting fired up for this Louisville one too. So is J.J. Weaver a guy who is going to walk on senior day, who not the biggest Louisville fan, was in this city? Like, there's going to be some motivation there. Jordan Wright playing in his last game at Kroger Field. Like, there's going to be some dudes with some juice down there. And you know what? It might lead to an aggressive mistake or two, kind of like we saw with Mike Wright pulling it and being a little, you know, just playing a little hero ball. But I also think that it's going to result in some much-needed havoc plays for this defense that can set the offense out with some short fields.
Yeah, that would be significant here. You look at Louisville, it's like their running game is a big play run game, but they take a lot of negative plays on the ground. So there's, like last week, Kentucky didn't produce any havoc. This week, they're going to need to. You just don't know what kind of player like Cunningham's going to look like. But if it's Brock Doman and they are making him play behind the chains, if they're stopping the run, making him play behind the chains, it's going to be a good day on defense. Mm-hmm. And I think the key to this game, Nick, really is who's going to be able to run the ball better with efficiency to kind of – because both offenses are going to want to protect their defense and let the defense kind of win the game for them. And for Kentucky, like, you kind of look at – you kind of dig into the numbers. Kentucky's run defense is better than Louisville's. Kentucky's running game, I think, mainly because of Chris, is a little bit better than Louisville's. So that gives them an advantage here, and that's why I think Kentucky's going to have a pretty good chance to win this game. And then we think, you know, maybe get some QB run with Levis. But you hear Louisville talk today, that's all they were really talking about, QB run, QB run, QB run.
Yeah, because they got lit their asses.
So
got
there
lit
is going to be there's going to be a play action opportunity for something like that. And if you would ever roll Levis out, now would be a good time to do it.
Well, and you mentioned the running game. Satterfield is expecting Tyon Evans to be back, a Tennessee transfer, which brings us to our next point. Are there any players that play football at the University of Louisville that signed up to play for the University of Louisville out of high school?
I did some research this morning, Nick. They have four former walk-ons playing. If they're not starters, they're rotating in and playing a lot of snaps.
Like the tight end. What's the tight end's?
Marshawn Ford.
Yep. He's one of them.
Two on the defensive line, and then Jalen Carter, receiver, I think, from Manuel, is a former walk-on that's in the rotation. Then they have three former four-star recruits in the rotation.
Former walk-ons than four-star recruits.
One of those is Brian Hudson, who transferred from Virginia Tech. The other two are Benjamin Perry, who kind of plays their nickel Sam linebacker role. And they're like 3-3-5 defense. And the other one is Chandler Jones, who's a super senior cornerback who doesn't even start, who rotates in, kind of plays corner and safety. Just so from a talent aspect, like Kentucky's got no talent. But what Louisville has here is a lot of super seniors and a lot of transfers. Top two running backs, Tyon Evans came from Tennessee. Jawar Jordan came from Syracuse. Top receiver, Tyler Hudson, who might be the best player on their team, transferred from Central Arkansas. Brian Hudson, who's probably their best lineman this year, transfer from Virginia Tech. Trevor Reed, who might be their best tackle, junior college transfer. You go on defense. Their best defensive lineman, Yaya Diaby. He is a junior college transfer. He's super senior. Two linebackers. Monty Montgomery, junior college transfer, super senior.
Yasir Abdullah, isn't he a transfer?
He's not a transfer, but he's a super senior. He's the best player on their defense. Like, he is the guy. Like, he stuffed the stat sheet. He's got tackles for loss. He's got multiple tackles. He's got double-digit tackles for loss. I think he's had 8 or 9 sacks. He's got 2 interceptions. He's got 4 forced fumbles. Handful of pass breakups. Like, he is the guy. Like, they have to have a plan for him. And Brian Brown, like, they move people around and they try to confuse you. They're bragging about – they're like, they've gotten a lot of sacks on 3-man pressure, but a lot of that is because they've caused so much confusion for offensive lines.
Ever heard that before?
And so, like, this is a lot. Like, there's, like, you watch tape and it's got 3-3-5 fingerprints all over it. I mean, that's really how they play. They're playing on defense right now. But yeah, you go like Momo Sanogo, who leads them in tackles, super senior, Ole Miss transfer.
Former Jarquez Jones teammate.
Jarvis Brownlee, who leads them in passes defended, Florida State transfer at cornerback. Quincy Riley, who leads them in interceptions. Middle Tennessee transfer at cornerback. MJ Griffin, Temple transfer at safety. I mean, it's a laundry list of transfers. I mean, this is their team that they just built in the portal, and it's just a different way to do things. I think Louisville has really kind of cashed in on this year because they've got 24 and 25 year old dudes out there playing, man. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, both these quarterbacks are 24, 25 years old. They've got Momo Sanogo, Monty Montgomery, Yaya Diaby are all like from the class. They graduated high school in the class of 2017.
Yeah. Yeah. Which was same year as Lynn Bowden, I believe.
Yes. Josh Pascal's class.
Yeah.
Like, they have just got guys that are old, just old dudes here. And so, they've taken advantage of this experience, and they're going to be a team. We'll see what they do in the portal, but they're going to be real young next year because they're probably going to want to get their return on NIL investment in the lineup right away with this recruiting class they're going to sign. So things could be more rocky next year, but they've taken – you got to credit to them. And Satterfield has totally changed, I think, his approach. You got to credit Brian Brown because, to me, it's obvious he did some studying somewhere about what to do on defense, and it's worked in the offseason.
I had a revelation, too, when you mentioned Momo Sanogo, because it's that time of year. We're recording this 2 days before the Egg Bowl. The two starting linebackers from the Elijah Moore dog piss game are playing in this game Saturday. Momo Sanogo and Jaquez Jones. They were both starting for Ole Miss when Elijah Moore took a leak in the end zone and started a cavalcade of – like, we're still seeing the ripple effects of Elijah Moore's dog piss in the end zone.
And Momo Sanogo made a huge play – 2020 for Ole Miss against Kentucky. There was a big fourth down sack, Terry Wilson, which kind of flipped the momentum, and I think Ole Miss went and grabbed the lead after that, and then Kentucky was playing from behind. He was the guy who got that sack. So him and Evans didn't play for Tennessee last year against the Kentucky game, but Sanogo has played one in Kroger Field before.
Oh, man. I Egg Bowl, it's got me fired. We'll talk about it later, but I just – freaking love the Egg Bowl. So we have talked at length about the Louisville defense, though, and I think the reason why, from afar, before you know, like you said, you really dug into the numbers, the part that is daunting is just the on paper, when you see all of the havoc stats they're creating and the way that they're winning games, it's very much the way that Kentucky's offense is losing games.
That's scary.
These are close games. And then you just make some really stupid mistakes and you leave opportunities out there on the field. That's how Kentucky's losing games, and that's how Louisville is winning games, is by, you know, how many – would they have 4 turnovers in the third quarter of the Wake Forest game? I mean, like
– they forced 8 turnovers in the Wake Forest game. I mean, it was just a total anomaly. I think Wake had 14 possessions and 8 of them were turnovers. 4 turnovers against Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh probably wins that game if they don't turn the ball over. You know, that might be the game here. You know, does Kentucky turn it over? If they don't, they're probably going to win. If they do, they're going to be in trouble. I mean, that's just – but you got to give them credit. That is not sustainable, Nick. Like, they're not going to force 28 takeaways next year. I would bet a lot on it.
Turnover luck.
Yeah. And so, like, and you look at – I think they have 15 interceptions, but they've got, like, 13 fumble recoveries. I mean, that's just insane. 13 in 12 games is a lot. To force that many fumbles and get on them, it's just, you know, you got to tip your hat. They've kind of figured out a winning recipe, and it's worked for them this year.
The thing that's shocking to me, Luckett, and it's a soapbox that I love to get on that I don't think Louisville fans are watching right now to get all ticked off and fired up about. But they're winning with defense, and they're actually going on a nice little run here, and yet – they don't care. Like, the Louisville fans, they're checked out or jaded, or I don't get it. Like, they're not showing up to games. Like, I'm not worried about a bunch of Louisville fans coming to Kroger Field. They won't even go to Floyd Street. Like, I don't understand how they're so disengaged when their basketball team stinks. Like, you would think you would want to cheer for something, for somebody, and they just aren't. There's no enthusiasm for Scott Satterfield's program. And my theory is, Luckett, my theory is that they only know how to cheer for teams that score like 50, 60 points a game because they, you know, They got spoiled on Chris Redman and Brian Brohm and Lamar Jackson and Bobby Petrino scoring 50, 60 points a game. That winning with defense is just not appealing to them, and they just don't care to show up. I don't understand it. You're around here. Do you get any sort of sense on it? Because I'm getting some trash talk from some Louisville fan friends, but it's not even – it's even – what are they just deflated and defeated from years previous? It's so weird to me how that's the Louisville fan mindset right now going into this game.
Well, there's overall fan base apathy that they're dealing with right now, mainly driven by the basketball program and all of their issues, which has gotten even worse this season, even without the tournament ban. Mm-hmm. And then football-wise, I just think they've kind of settled in here, and they just feel like they're a middle-of-the-road program, and they're just not used to being that. And so add that on top of, I think most people have come to the conclusion that Satterfield is not good. They would rather have another coach in there.
Bring Brohm home.
I think a lot of them are kind of waiting for these recruits to see if it gets more exciting. But there is something to what you're saying. Like that they watch their program get built with offense, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that was a big thing. Charlie Strong, I think, fought there.
Yeah.
Was how he won. A lot of people didn't love the style of ball. And now, like, they're winning like this. No one's going to these games. It's just weird. I just think there's just overall fatigue, apathy. And their damn stadium's too big. It's about 20,000. I mean, it's seriously like 15,000, 20,000 seats too big. And that makes everything else look bad. And they need to have like a 40,000 seat stadium. There's no sense in Louisville having a, what is it, 55, Nick?
Something like that.
Yeah, there's no sense in that. I mean, that's going to be, they would have to be like top five cooking with gas good for that thing to sell out weekly. And it's just, you know, that shouldn't be how your stadium is. So that I think that hurts the optics of situations. Yeah, I think mostly it's general apathy, and then most people have kind of settled on Satterfield. But I do think that things could turn. Like, if you go and beat Kentucky, that's what they love the most. Mm-hmm. People could start to turn on him. But if you go and – I mean, if he goes and loses this game, like, it's going to be – you know, he's going to have another prove-it year for that fan base next year. Because at the end of the day, it'll be 7-5, but it's just 7-5. You didn't beat Kentucky.
Yeah.
You know, they beat top 10 Wake Forest, and fans rushed the field. And you felt like they tried to make a big deal of that, but Wake Forest is going to end the year not ranked.
Right, right.
So they're going to like time.
It's kind of like the thing too. When you look at Louisville football, as much as they like to pump their chests out over all of their accomplishments and stuff, I think they're like one game over 500 in ACC play.
He's four. Like Satterfield's going to be one or two games over 500 if he loses on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
4 years.
It's just tough. Like they're learning that Power Five football is a grind, and they don't know how to handle it. And to your point, I think you said that Clemson is the only stadium that's bigger in the ACC than Louisville, or maybe I mean in Miami. Like
if Miami and Pittsburgh are pro stadiums.
Right, right, but on campus college. Venues, only Clemson's is bigger.
Yeah, just you go around the league and, you know, it's just not – the fan bases aren't huge in the ACC, right? You got a lot of academic schools. You got city schools. And you just got that kind of a blend where it's not – it's just not like the SEC or the Big Ten where it's their fan bases just aren't as big.
Yeah, like Lane Stadium at Virginia Tech is – and Clemson, Death Valley are really the only.
Yeah, but even Lane Stadium only holds like 50,000 people. It's a small stadium.
Yeah.
The fan bases just aren't. I mean, that's all. I mean, the fan bases just aren't as big, and they don't have as much money as these other schools, and that's why they're behind in this realignment stuff, right? Or these TV contracts.
It just doesn't mean more. They got kicked off and put on the RSN last weekend, so, you know.
Yeah, and they've got the dumbest TV deal.
It's the worst TV deal ever. Like They're consistently not on television. It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, and I think that's part of Louisville fans. They know their conference isn't good. And they're sitting here battling for 4-4. Florida State's the biggest. That's the biggest one. Them and Clemson have the biggest stadiums.
We forgot about that one. They're also doing the thing, too, where the ACC hates us. They don't like Louisville. Like, every time.
Well, even Satterfield talked about Greensboro when they had the James Madison ruling. And then Clemson didn't. There was something, I don't know. Fans were talking about stuff that happened in the Clemson game. I didn't watch it.
It was a targeting call in the Clemson game. That was like, okay. And they're just like, oh, in Greensboro, they don't like us here. And it's cute. It's really funny. And what's even going to be more hilarious is whenever the Cats just put it on them once again. We're going to tell you exactly how after we tell you that you can get to the game with our friends at LexTran this weekend. Avoid the parking problem. Skip the traffic this fall. Catch the LexTran game day shuttle to Kroger Field. It's a $1 each way. Just bring an exact change, a single smackaroli, and you'll stay out of the rain. They'll put you up real close to the stadium. It's quick, it's convenient, and it's easy. Just visit LexTran.com to see the pickup and drop-off locations all around Lexington. That's LexTran.com. All right, Luckett. We know that this Louisville defense can create some havoc. So how do you attack it? How do you fight? Do you fight fire with fire?
I think people got excited about those last two possessions, right? Where we kind of saw modern Kentucky college offense from Kentucky, where they were spreading it out, running RPOs, and doing some fun things. I'm not sure that's what you want to do against Louisville. Open yourself up to see a lot of exotic blitzes. I think like you're going to see a lot of 12 personnel. You're going to see heavy sets. You're going to try to absorb whatever Louisville brings to you with their front, and you're going to try to run the ball with Chris Rodriguez downhill. I think that's the key to the game. I think it's going to be similar to Mississippi State. We're going to have to get run heavy, and then you need Levis to make some plays on third down. But I think you're going to be able to take advantage of some matchups in the secondary, or you should be able to at least. And so to me, that's the key to the game. It's really kind of similar to Mississippi State. You need heavy sets. You need to run the ball with number 24. Let him carry you. And that's how you're going to, I think, take care of the ball, finish and create scoring opportunities and potentially finish drives is with a heavy run. I know that's probably not what we all want, but I think that's the recipe for success this week. I mean, it's a 30-plus carry game for Chris Rodriguez, to me, in my opinion.
Let him roll up. What's the – I don't have the latest numbers on how many yards he needs, but – he got what, like 50 against Georgia? So, not bad.
Do you know what Benny's is off the top of your head?
It's like 3-4-3-3 or something.
Well, it's more than that because Chris is at 3-5-2-3.
Give me 2 seconds and I'll have it pulled up. Benny Snell had 3,873. So,
he needs 350 yards to tie.
Gosh. So you need a 200-yard game and then a 150-yard game.
Yeah.
Which?
Yeah. Now, Clemson, like, doable. You watch the Clemson tape. Clemson, both backs ran for over 100 yards, and they had a lot of success just running straight at them.
And Clemson's had offensive line problems all year, too. Like, that's not the strength of their team.
Israel Abanikanda for Pitt had a good game on the ground against Louisville. So Boston College was able to run the ball against a bad offensive line against Louisville. Like, really, the weakness of a defense like this is giving up big plays. They've been good about eliminating those. But, like, Boston College, like, that's maybe the best-case scenario for Kentucky. Like, Boston College, Jerkovic hit on some bombs. They were able to run the ball. They rolled up, like, 7.7 yards per play against Louisville. And they are awful on offense. Yeah. I mean, absolutely awful.
Whew.
And they would have scored more if it wasn't for three turnovers. Like, Louisville got three turnovers and still gave up 34 points in that game. And early in the year, they gave up a lot of yards. Florida State ran for over 200 yards. Syracuse ran for over 200 yards. And Schrader hurt them with QB run. Like, I think that's the key. Like, Kentucky's got to be able to run the ball. The team that runs the ball the best and stops the run the best is going to win this game, in my opinion. So, I think that's key for Kentucky to come out and hammer the rock. Louisville's still undersized on the defensive line, Nick. So just kind of you're going to have to come out and try to get hat on a hat and big boy them and let, you know, Chris Rodriguez breaks a lot of tackles. Louisville hasn't really, I don't think, tackled a back like this. So just let him get downhill and just let him run, let him roll. I think that's a key to the game.
Well, and that's really what this series has been when Kentucky's been successful. It's just, all right, we're gonna bully your ass. We're going to shove you into a locker for 60 minutes. Hold on, get ready, let's go.
Yeah.
And that hasn't really been Kentucky football that much this year, but that's what you laid out earlier, that the one time they were able to do that was against Mississippi State, and it worked well. It's the best offense has looked really all year long.
Yeah. They figured out the Mississippi State puzzle, but couldn't figure out the rest of the offensive puzzle. That kind of year for Kentucky. But maybe that might be a good thing for this game. Again, I think Louisville plays a lot like Mississippi State. They're aggressive, twist, stunt, bring linebackers a lot. Best way to handle that is just kind of to run right at it and then see what if you can get the ground game rolling. Potentially actually opens up some things on the outside in the play action pass game on early downs. So
here's something we've done on 11 personnel this year. We've told you what's going to happen before it happens. So let's say Saturday is we're leaving Kroger Field feeling pretty good. How did we reach that end goal of another ass whooping? Scott's crying about the L's down again, like, you know. Grass is green, sky's blue. What's new? How do we get there? How does that game kind of look like at Kroger Field in that scenario?
Yeah, Kentucky runs for over 200 yards and keeps Louisville's run game in check. If they do that, they should have full control of the game. They should win a game if it plays out like that. The only way Louisville, I think, could win is just special teams catastrophes and turnovers. But we've seen that is very, very possible with this group. But I think that's the key right there.
Well, if I'm going to provide the kind of pessimistic point of view, because I can just see it's kind of similar to the Vanderbilt game where you could see the story playing out ahead of time. Them coming out flat, none of us predicted that Vanderbilt loss to actually happen, but you could see the sloppy performance kind of coming. I'm not seeing that. I'm not getting some sort of sense that Kentucky's going to come out flat against Louisville, but the script of the game, it's offense gets down to the 30.
Yeah.
They stall out on a long drive. Louisville, you know, you don't really get much. You do that a couple times. You get inside the 10, you go for it. You get, like, you can see where Kentucky's moving, turnover, moving, three and out. And then third quarter rolls around. Things are getting a little bit tight. And then Will Levis, who is struggling and it just makes another critical mistake. And Louisville scores a defensive touchdown and just holds on for dear life. I can see that happening just because in the grand scheme of things, like it, this series, it swings back and forth. Like one team's winning four or five in a row, and then it goes the exact opposite direction. The other team's winning four or five in a row. We're in the middle of a 4-year run for Kentucky with one taken out from the COVID season. Like eventually this thing's going to flip back. And the way that things have gone for Kentucky in the second half of the season, the way things have gone for Louisville, like you can see all of these narratives fitting into one another to just create a disaster at Kroger Field on Saturday.
Yeah, it's the most, to be 50-50 game that they've had in the series here in a little bit. Louisville's points per scoring opportunity defense, Nick, is top 10. We know Kentucky's offense.
It's like last
hundreds of points per score. Yeah. So, like, we know that's a worry in this game, obviously. So, yeah, I mean, like, you talk about big picture storylines and whatnot, but, like, Kentucky has to win this game. Like, Mark Stoops knows it. The team knows it. Everybody knows it. You just have to hope after a good performance showing against Georgia that they come back and play one of their better games. Quarterback's healthy. It's a good matchup for your run game on offense. Defensively, like, it's a good matchup for Kentucky. Louisville struggles to score. It's just bottom line. They've scored, you know, they've had issues scoring multiple touchdowns in games. I think that lines up with what Kentucky's going to need here on Saturday, is to get a bunch of stops. And so I think things line up well here for Kentucky. They need to go play the game and go play it well. But they have better players for the most part than Louisville. Louisville's got some good bright spots, but I think Kentucky's got better players, and they should win this. And Louisville's dealing with, you know, we talk about Kentucky's quarterback injuries, but look, that's just, like, whatever Cunningham's playing through is serious. Like,
yeah.
You know, and if they're throwing him out there, you need to take advantage of it. I mean, you need to finish drives. You need to take care of the football, and you need to run it straight downhill at this defense that doesn't want to play, that wants to get you in a spread formation and attack you with their linebackers. They're really good at timing up snaps, so that's going to be big this week. Hard counts. I think maybe you need to see more under center here to just run downhill. Maybe take advantage of some of that aggressiveness. So, I mean, it's a – Kentucky's backed up in a corner here. We've seen them twice to be in this type of spot, Nick. I guess you could throw Georgia in this, but it's not kind of the same. But Missouri and Mississippi State was kind of similar spots to be in. They came out and played well right, for the most part.
And so you got to respond to adversity, and yeah, they did.
So you have to hope they did. This is a swing game. There's no doubt about it. It's an ultimate swing game, because if you win this, you keep the Louisville series going in the right direction. It's a bad season, but you got some stuff together, NIL, all of that. And now you can move forward and you can make some changes to prevent this type of year from happening again with the same type of misuse. But if you lose, things are going to get really, really ugly here. People are going to be really pissed off.
Yeah.
If you go out, you cannot lose four home games, man. You cannot have an 8-game home schedule and lose four of them. And it's not like you were a big dog to anybody except Georgia. Like, all those games are games your fans expect you to win. You cannot go out and lose three of those games. You cannot lose this game. Like, you just got to go out and win. Got to find a way to do it.
Yeah. You just have to. I just don't know any other way to put it, because
you got to, yeah, like, this is not, you're a 3.5-point favorite. Like, you just got to go win this game. Like, bottom line, no matter what it looks like, just go win it. You have to win it.
Because, like, as bad as the season's been, you can at least kind of walk away like, well, you beat Louisville, you won at Florida. Like, things can be worse. Grand scheme of things, when you look at the overall general picture as a Kentucky fan, maybe not a young Kentucky fan, but for Kentucky fans like you and I, of a certain age, beating Louisville and Florida in the same season is not a bad season at all. So that's what's at stake. On Saturday, you're also saying goodbye to some great football players who have done a lot for your program. It'll be the last time we see number 7 in a Kentucky football uniform. Like, you want to send him out with a win. You can't have just this sour taste in your mouth from a season that it fell short of expectations for a future first-round draft pick. Like, go out and get a win, Will, right? Like, Chris, yeah, all-time great. Like, You need to send these guys off the right way. Chris Oates is going to be participating in senior day. There's not going to be a dry eye in the house. Like, it's going to be – there should be some juice for these cats. And that's why I do at least feel good in that regard, that, like, Mark Stoops, you know, he's not like Mike Leach in a rivalry game. He gets these dudes.
Yeah, that's a good point. They're all usually always ready for this game.
Even when they are big dogs and, like, they had to just – they're fighting on the field pregame to get ready. Like, they aren't messing around. And so I'm excited for this game, and it's just a lot's on the line. A lot's on the line.
Yeah. And this is why having this game at the end of the year is awesome. It's in its rightful place. And it's going to be good. It's going to do everybody a lot of good if you can go into this big month of December with some positivity.
Yeah, because it's going to be a crazy December.
Stoops with recruiting already, portal, coaching changes. Mm-hmm. It's just going to do everybody a good amount of good if you can enter that with a good taste in your mouth. Bowl season, bowl prep, bowl game. just they really need this win. I mean, it's a they really, really, really need to get this win. But they, you know, they've been in this spot before, you know, against Satterfield. 2019, they were 6-5. You know, that it would have looked a lot different if they lost to Louisville and went 6-6. And Louisville had a lot of momentum. They had an offense of scoring all kinds of points against ACC, and they came across here and Kentucky punked them. And we've seen that kind of being a prevailing theme that Kentucky was just been a lot better than a lot of these teams they've played. And mentality wise, they are just more ready for this moment, this rivalry moment, I think, than Louisville has been. And if you look back, Nick, at Satterfield, like, they scored 13 points that first year, and they got a late, like, 60-yard touchdown run by Javian Hawkins before half.
Right.
I mean, that they could have just – and they scored on the opening possession. Like, Kentucky, you take that possession out, Kentucky stopped them, like, 10 possessions in a row. All right? And then you go back last year, Louisville scores first drive. Kentucky gets, like, 5, 6, 7 stops in a row, and then Louisville gets 2 garbage time touchdowns. Kentucky goes up 45-7. They score. Kentucky comes down, scores again. Louisville comes and scores again. Like, so they, like, Brad White's defense has had a lot of success against Satterfield's offense. And then I go to point about Louisville's offense struggling. That's a big part in this game. Maybe, you know, some people have gotten upset about the defense because they haven't won games like 17-14 or 14-10 against South Carolina or whatever. Mm-hmm. Maybe this is a game where they're able to hold Louisville to 10, 13 points, and they're able to win a game 21-10.
Yeah.
So I think that's really why I feel good about this game, because I could see Kentucky really holding Louisville to 2 touchdowns or less, but I can also see Kentucky getting to 21, 24 points in this game, because I think they're going to be able to play with efficiency. They're going to be able to be ahead of the chains against this Louisville defense. I think they're going to be able to run the ball, and I think that's going to make things easier for everybody on offense.
Oh, man, I'm excited. We'll see what Brad White's got in his bag, but I'm feeling pretty confident about his defense being able to slow them down like it. And then it just becomes a matter of can they make the play that Jordan Wright, where he almost jumps the route and has a pick six against Georgia. You know, like they haven't really. Kedron Smith did it at Florida, and look at like that just completely turns the game upside down, right? Like the getting that defensive score. Or the special teams when Barron Brown was returning stuff, like that's some complimentary football that they really need with a struggling offense. So
yeah, and then you talk like Louisville special, like Jawar Jordan returned a kick for a touchdown last week. Like, they won the game last week because of their special teams and defense. So that's huge. Like, any type of return will be big. But another thing we've seen in this game, Nick, like, Kentucky has made Louisville's ass quit in the second half of these games the last 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if you get up again, say you get up 10 in the third quarter, can you do that again?
They're quitting. Like, this, no team is better at quitting when they're behind than Scott Satterfield football teams. Like, you can just see the inability to tackle an opponent just drain from their soul. It's like the Monstars getting their the NBA guys, the Monstars are sucking their talent out. They're just sort of like zombieing around, like, I don't want to touch Chris Rodriguez. It is hilarious to watch them just quit football games, and I want to see that so badly, because that's
the everybody could use that, right?
Yeah, from everything has sucked this week. So, like, for the last 2-3 weeks, this season's been tough, but like, just overwhelming an ACC opponent is so satisfying. And Kentucky can get their steamrollers out and beat the ever loving snot out of the Cards this weekend, and really help us exercise our 2022 Kentucky football demons.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be medicine well deserved.
Well deserved. We're getting this podcast out a little bit earlier than normal for the Thanksgiving holiday. It's an exciting time of year. We've got, it's Feast Week. There's so many sports on between Feast Week, with college basketball, World Cup's happening. U.S. plays England on Friday after a stupid draw on Monday. That sucked. But we got rivalry football games, and Luckett, this is like some all-time Egg Bowl feels and going into this game. We got Lane over here. I mean, he's on his way out, and he's
just tweeting through. It was like Sonny Dykes last year when the SMU fans were booing him at home. Feels like that could happen on Thursday night.
But Mike Leach is horrendous at at rivalry games. And like, can you just see like Quinshon Judkins running for like 180 yards against this team?
Yeah, no doubt.
So you
have to. It's a lot of noise going around Ole Miss right now. I really like Mississippi State before Ole Miss blew that game last week. I felt like that was coming. The Alabama hangover got to them.
Yeah.
So I don't like it as less, but like, there's just a lot of reasons to potentially like Mississippi State in this matchup. And I think this, Nick, I think this is kind of a battle for the Citrus Bowl. I'd be interested to see what the rankings would look like if Ole Miss lost, because then Mississippi State and them are both 8-4.
Yeah.
And so how would they shake that out if State won? Like, we could get Mike Leach in the Citrus Bowl, which would be an outstanding season
for
them getting to that point.
Kind of what we anticipated preseason. Was their win total 7.5 or 6.5?
6.5. It went over last week.
Nice, nice. But I love the Egg Bowl because it's like I'm going to be – hopefully kids are exhausted from, you know, Thanksgiving activities. They go to bed early, pull out the bourbon, and just start tweeting up a firestorm Thanksgiving night. Because the NFL game is going to stink. It's Patriots, Vikings. Kirk Cousins is going to be – he's gonna be like 10 of 21 for 104 yards. It's gonna be uglier than sin. So give me all of your eggs. I want the king of the eggs. I love this game so much. But we do have some other pretty tantalizing rivalry games this week. Cadillac and the Iron Bowl. Doesn't it kind of feel like Saban's just gonna like smash them, and then like they're gonna try to make a case to be like a playoff team again?
Yeah, that's what I think. Maybe that interim juice is over.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool for a little while.
And especially if they announced Lane as the head coach on Friday.
Yeah. Auburn. Yeah.
So then you're just playing the game. And then, you know, the tension is not even really on the game. It's just like when Kentucky played South Carolina a couple years ago and, like, it was announced that Shane Beamer got the job, like, while the game was going on.
That was wild. Florida State is a 9.5-point favorite over Florida.
They've been playing really good the last month. I mean, blowing teams out.
Yeah, but are they 9.5 points better than Florida? I know they're at home. I mean,
it's a good time to jump on Florida after that loss last week. Everybody's going to want to fade them.
But like, I still think like, I know we don't play scoreboard math here, but they still put it on South Carolina like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I know South Carolina just did. Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, like if you're playing scoreboard math, you can talk yourself into Florida. And it just part of me, it's like ACC versus SEC, Jimmys and Joes. I know the only thing is about this is Florida doesn't have their typical dudes in the trenches to just wreck hell and put a ton of pressure on Jordan Travis.
But yeah. That is, I do like the move this game to Friday night, though.
Yeah.
It'll be a nice Friday night watch.
Am I going to have to watch Iowa in the Big Ten Championship game like it?
Yeah. I mean, it's just Kirk Ferentz sorcery.
I mean, Mickey Joseph can't – they're 10.5-point dogs. Jeez, Nebraska.
Yeah, 35-point total. Yeah, I don't see it. Like, Iowa's won 4 in a row here, Nick. Got to give them credit, man. They just figure it out. They just win games. That defense coordinator, Phil Parker, is just awesome. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they just figure it out. Now you're gonna be 8-4. Like, you know, that Iowa team we made fun of is gonna go 8-4, and it literally could have been 10-2 because they should have beat Iowa State at home. They lost Iowa State at home by 3. They lost at Illinois by 3, and they scored 13 combined points in those two games. Like, literally, that should have been a 10-2 team that lost to Michigan, Ohio State. You know, it's competing for a New Year's Six Bowl, but they can't figure out offense. They just they're just wasting these top five defenses that Parker's producing every year.
Speaking of the Big Ten, do we know how healthy Blake Corum is?
It sounded not great. And Donovan Edwards is hurt too, his backup.
Because they put him back in the game, but he only got it once, and then it was like, we're not going to play you. Because like I was fully prepared to bet Michigan +7 going in like to last week, because I thought that number would be about a touchdown no matter what. The way that Michigan plays is the way Ohio State doesn't want to play. Like, Ohio State stinks at playing in the mud under Ryan Day. But I can't – how can you trust them, though, if they don't have their All-American running back, right? Like,
it's going to be raining in Columbus.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I kind of like Ohio State there. It just feels like – they feel like the best team in the country to me.
Are they just, like, doing the thing where they play with their food, like they're getting bored? Like, been underwhelming. Jackson Smith and Ojigbo hasn't been playing. Like, they've had a ton of injuries to their star players. So,
yeah,
like,
but they've scored 40 or more points in 10 of their last 11 games. So it's not like they're not going out and putting numbers up.
So what you're saying is the under is not a slam dunk.
Yeah, I think Ohio State's – I think they're going to win a national championship. I just think their offense will go on a run here, and I don't think anybody can keep up with them. That's left. That's just my opinion. We'll see how it plays out. I just don't – like, you are right. If Michigan got them to play in the mud, they'd be in trouble. Like, yeah. If it gets to a nine-possession game and it's like, all right, we got to stop the run here.
Yeah.
We got to stop power. Like, yeah. They're in trouble if Michigan can do that. But I don't know if it'll get to that point, especially with Corum out. That'd be a big loss.
Two games that we would never talk about on Rivalry Week, but I actually think could be fun to play. Georgia Tech 35-point dogs, like
playing for bowl eligibility.
They've been low key good under Brent Key. They've been better, aren't they? I want to say they're 3-0 against ranked teams since they fired and elevated their offensive line coach. So, like, who's to say they can't mess around and cover?
Yeah, I think Kirby's going to want a big score after last week.
Fair enough. In any shot that South Carolina still has any of that magic?
No, I'd expect. Now, that line's big. It's 14 in the hook.
Yeah. Hook is what's hard for me.
They could not play well on cover, I think.
But, like, I could see, like, Spencer Rattler throwing three interceptions, getting sacked seven times, and, like, them scoring 6 points after they scored 63 on Tennessee.
Yeah, yeah. You could definitely see them scoring 10 points Saturday. I could no doubt about it.
Man, if I wait till it's – I'm going to have to go over to Indiana Saturday morning and get that team total under for South Carolina. That feels like the move in that game.
Yeah.
Man. I freaking love Rivalry Week.
I like Oregon State matchup this year.
The Don't Call Me Civil War?
Yeah. Oregon State quietly is 8-3.
Yeah.
Like, they're having a really good season. They're good on offense. Bo Nix is hobbled. Oregon obviously I don't know if they've clinched yet to go to the Pac-12. I know USC has clinched. I think they have to win the clinch.
Which, by the way, Caleb Williams – that dude,
yeah,
he can throw a football.
Yeah, they have to. I would be interested to see the tiebreakers because it looks like it could be Oregon, Washington, Utah could all end up at 7-2. So they have to win the clinch. But yeah, I mean, Oregon State can maybe knock them out of the Pac-12 championship game, which would be a pretty big deal there. That's a heated rivalry. Those two teams hate each other, so that's a sneaky good game, I think.
I thought the USC number would be bigger, too. I was a little disappointed in that. I thought it'd be kind of a big number because
that's another spoiler game. Notre Dame's been playing good ball here last month of the season.
But, what I wanted this to be a game in South Bend that's, like, cold and, bad weather game.
They do the weird thing, though, where when it's in South Bend, it's in October. And then when it's in L.A., it's the last game of the year.
They need to play in Indiana in November and just freeze them out. Like,
yeah, I'm sure USC does not want to do that.
But, man, it's just we got so much good football this weekend.
Are you ready for Clemson to be in the playoff?
Huh?
You need to mentally prepare yourself for Clemson sneaking their way into this playoff.
No, not doing it. Especially if you're North Carolina lost. No, I'm not doing it.
Just think about it here. Like, USC could easily lose one of these next two games, right?
Yeah, and they're probably going to. Pac-12, that's what they do.
Loser of Ohio State probably beats Michigan. Michigan's not going to get in with their bad schedule.
Yep.
So Georgia, Ohio State, let's assume TCU. Sneaky old, little old Dabo just sitting over there 12-1 with a conference championship.
Yep.
They're going to get in. Like, they just are. Just get ready for it.
Gosh.
Because they're getting in over Michigan, like one-loss Michigan, just because of the conference championship. They're just getting in. And especially if Notre Dame were to beat USC this weekend, like they're getting in. And then they blow out to Notre Dame, but that was a ranked team, good team. The wins for Clemson are terrible.
I don't want to live in this world where it's plucky underdog Dabo Swinney. I don't want
to
live in that
world. They're going to go and play Georgia and lose 34-6, and just going to be is what it is. But it's another year.
We're ending the show on such a positive note. What the hell, buddy?
It's just another year where the fourth team has just got no business.
Yeah, where there's really just three good teams.
Well, TCU too. Like, I mean, I think Ohio State will probably handle them, the 2-3. I mean, it's just – I think we're heading towards Georgia, Ohio State. It's what I
feel. Shout out to TCU, though, for finding ways to win. Like, they aren't like a one-trick pony, right? Like, they can win in a lot of different ways. So, good for
The problem is, like, you know, Tennessee, Alabama, Oregon, USC are all probably two lost teams that I think will be better than Clemson.
Yeah.
They're just not going to get in over them.
Right. That's why 12-team playoff. Solve all problems. man, well, it's been a lot of fun, Luckett. I gotta get rolling, ripping and roaring. But hopefully all of y'all out there who are watching on the KSR YouTube channel or are listening while you're driving, wherever you're driving for this Thanksgiving holiday, please be safe. We're extra thankful that y'all have tuned into us all year to help get you ready for each game on Saturday. It hasn't been as fun as we'd like, but we always have fun talking ball, Luckett.
And if you get that rushing total for C-Rod, we like the over.
I'm down. I'm game for that. Check it out Saturday morning, wherever you place your wagers. And until next time, he's Adam Luckett. I'm Nick Roush. We'll see you later. Go Cats. Let's kick Louisville's ass Saturday.